Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tattoos were fringe. Now they're mainstream. Everything imaginable. Hearts, fairies, dolphins, and some we'd never really thought of. Literary tattoos. Great works, and some just okay, all over American Bodies. Jack Kerouac, plus the man himself, all over a back. Sylvia Plath, plus fighting war tank, all over a chest. Dewey Decimal numbers in the crook of an arm. This hour On Point, we dive into the world of literary tattoos. You can join the conversation. Is that you? With Kafka down your arm, Whitman on your shoulder, Kundera on your tummy. Why exactly? What's the story? What's it mean? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And you can see quite a photo gallery right now at the website, and more from listeners themselves, their literary tattoos at Facebook, On Point Radio. Joining me right now from New York are the editors of an eye-popping, kind of mind-bending new book, The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide, Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor. Eva Talmadge is a writer and literary agent. She has her own literary tattoo, an illustration from Melville's Moby Dick. Eva Talmadge, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great, and great to have you here. And Justin Taylor is author of the short story collection Everything Here Is Just the Best Thing Ever, and the upcoming novel The Gospel of Anarchy. Justin Taylor, welcome to you as well.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
We're so grateful to have you here. This is some kind of book, and I wish, just for starters, you would, just the two of you, just kind of roll out some of the literary names in here. Just give us a whole bunch of them. We'll look at the tattoos, but what artists, what writers are included? Will we find in the pages of this book? Will we find on the bodies of these people?
You will find D.H. Lawrence. You'll find Oscar Wilde, Mikhail Lermontov, Marie Sendak, Shel Silverstein, J.K. Rowling, Stephen King.
Also a lot of James Joyce, E.E. Cummings, and Kurt Vonnegut make multiple appearances.
Not to mention Auden and Kierkegaard and Eric Carle, and we mentioned Kundera before, and right on, Philip K. Dick and others that I never, John Greenleaf Whittier and others that I had never even heard of. What got you guys onto this? I mean, these photos are just unbelievable. Did you just start seeing them around?
We did start seeing these tattoos around. My roommate came home with a Faulkner tattoo one day.
What did it say?
A hot seed wild in the wet blind earth.
Okay.
I believe it's in the book.
Yes. I remember that one. It's on a forearm, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then one of Justin's roommates has a couple of literary tattoos, and we were talking about his tattoos and noticing perhaps a trend here.
What did your roommate have, Justin?
My roommate, Drew Toll, who's the old books editor at Time Out New York, he's not there anymore. He has a Mark Twain caricature drawing of the author that integrates his initials into the drawing. And then he'd had that one for a while. I think the new one he got was a Melville, actually. It was one of Rockwell Kent's illustrations from Moby Dick, the chapter where Ahab is first introduced, and it's the tree and the lightning is coming and there's the fire, and it's this very Old Testament kind of thing. And he'd been wanting it for a long time, and he went and got it somewhere. It must have been around the same time that Eva's roommate Alyssa got hers. And we said, you know, we wonder if this is just a coincidence or maybe we're actually onto something here.
You've been broad-minded in your definition. It's not just text, though there is a lot of text in this book. We're going to talk with a man who has a kind of ode to Proust all over his back. Looks like the Gutenberg Bible. But you're also accepting illustrations here. I mean, the very first one in the book is a portrait of John Berryman. He wrote the Dream Songs, and he's on, looks like, somebody's shoulders, Sarah Frances Hollis in Kentucky. Describe that one for us, Eva.
It's a portrait of John Berryman that came in to us over email, and I was quite taken when I saw this. We also got on the next page, you'll see a stanza from one of John Berryman's Dream Songs.
Can you read it for us?
Once in a sycamore, I was glad, all at the top, and I sang. Hard on the land where's the strong sea, and empty grows every bed. And
so,
I'm a big, big fan of Berryman, so I was so pleased to see that come in, and we decided to put it right up front.
And here he is in all his cool, bespectacled, big-bearded, flower-garlanded self on what looks like his shoulder. and then this text, and how did maybe the text is on somebody else's arm? I don't know. This is Jacob in Chicago who's got it on the Dream Song quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
How did he explain why in this case? I mean, the why question is all over this book, but why this quote on this forearm, Justin? What did he say?
Well, Jacob, like many contributors to the book, sent in a paragraph describing the reason behind this particular tattoo, why they chose what they chose, you know, what the work meant to them. And in this piece, Jacob, I won't read you the whole thing, but just kind of to gloss it, Jacob says he's looking for something simple and beautiful, and he likes how the sounds in this passage are soft and resonant. And then he wanted to preserve the typeface that was in the edition of the book that he had. And I think that touches on something that you'll see over and over again as you go throughout this book, that people get literary tattoos as a way of expressing their love or their dedication, not just to, you know, this poem or this writer, but really to really specific editions. You know, this book that I got when I was X age, you know, this copy of this volume, whatever.
And that's something repeated throughout. People will say they have a certain book that stayed with them for years.
Oh, absolutely. We see that. I'm feeling like it's hard to convey the bounteous splendor of what's in this book. Just give us more and more examples and describe what they look like, if you would, Eva, Justin. Tell us about these tattoos. What do they say? Where are they? What do they look like? Give us more and more.
Well, one of the most striking tattoos in the book is a full sleeve that comes from Franz Kafka. A woman, Christina Grinovich in Boston, has her entire arm covered in full-color full-color Kafka-inspired work. She's got a portrait of the author. She's got some text in Cyrillic. She has several bugs, a cockroach. There's an open book at the very top of her arm, kind of crowning the shoulder, and it goes all the way down to some beautiful flowers and looks like spider webs and just a huge tableau of Kafka-inspired art.
Yeah, unbelievable how many hours that must have taken. Well, Justin, what else? What else? Give us more.
Well, one of the ones that's my favorite, just because, well, not just because, but because I love the poem that it comes from so much, is a woman named Elizabeth Vegvari, who's in Cohasset, California. She sent us a tattoo it's two tattoos, really, but they go together for her, and it spans both her forearms. On the right, she's got the Tree of Knowledge from the Garden of Eden, in what she calls a memento mori, and there's a skeleton. This tree is made out of a human skeleton.
Yeah.
And then on the left are lines from the second of T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets, which is far and away my favorite Eliot work. And the lines read, "I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing." It's just beautiful. And on the left, these lines on her left forearm are in a sort of ornate but somehow austere typeface. And they're just words. And then the tree skeleton on the other arm, you know, has no words. So if you saw either one on its own, you wouldn't necessarily connect them. But in the photograph, she's got both her arms together. And the two, you know, the image and the text clearly respond to each other and complement each other quite beautifully.
Many that are beautiful, exuberant, many that are sad, some kind of disturbing. We'll talk about that, but give us more, Eva, more. We've got T.S. Eliot, Wait Without Love. What else?
One of my favorites is an Eric Carle tattoo, and this comes from a bookseller in Miami, Florida, Becky Quiroga, who runs a children's book room at the store Books and Books in Coral Gables. And Eric Carle, the author, came in one day for an event at the bookstore, and she's always been a big fan of him and the Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar. And so in her exuberance and so happy to meet him, she had him draw the caterpillar on her forearm, and then she took a picture with him that's in the book. You can see Eric Carle and Becky smiling, and she's got this magic marker caterpillar in her arm, and then she goes straight to the tattoo shop and shows the tattoo artist this caterpillar and explains, you know, what it is, and he does the tattoo, and now she has this beautiful, colorful caterpillar on her arm, and she says people all over the world have seen it and recognized and known exactly what it was because of Eric Carle's fame.
Because they know there's a whole category of children's literature here. Harriet the Spy on somebody's shank here. We've got Let the Wild Rumpus Begin and all of that from Where the Wild Things Are. We've got Lewis Carroll and Harry Potter makes his big appearance. And that's very, very serious things here as well, Justin. Take us into that realm. You name it. I mean, whatever you like. We've got the brothers Karamazov here, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, the Karamazov tattoo, I think qualifies as pretty serious. Someone's got the complete text of Sharon Old's poem, I Go Back to May 1937, in a very ornate, flowing design that goes all down, you know, starts up on the shoulder and goes down her arm. Her name is Molly Sutton. A lot of the Melville stuff is pretty serious. This one tattoo from Bristow, Virginia, this woman, Jessica, writes about how she'd put off reading Moby Dick for a very long time, and then she was going to start, and she wasn't, and she finally did, and it took her a long time to get through, but she really fell in love with it and has read very deeply into Moby Dick as a struggle to understand and accept God, is how she reads it. And so she chose these lines from it. Dissect him how I may then, I but go skin deep. I know him not and never will.
Wow. On her body, very
on
likely
body.
Forever. And they just go on and on. Here's one from Cordelia in Spain, Valencia. She's in her undies, but she's got this thing all up her abdomen with Salome, original illustration from Aubrey Beardsley's illustrations. And it's Salome holding this beheaded, was it John the Baptist? And it's the, you know, I mean, this is some wild tattoo. The next person who shows up on that train is going to wonder what happened here. But it is a... It is a blow-your-hair-back world you've brought to us. We're really grateful for us. The new book is The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide. Editors Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor are with us this hour. We're going to hear from people with great tattoos, amazing tattoos on their bodies, text and literature. You can join us. Do you have a poem on your forearm, a library on your back, literary words to live by on your abdomen, your ankle? Let's hear them. What have you got? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about literary tattoos, bodies adorned with Melville, Kafka, Pynchon, Plath, Kundera, Cervantes, and so much more. The editors of a new book, The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide, are with us. Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor here from New York. We've got an incredible gallery up at our website, On Point Radio, of photographs of literary tattoos from their book and from many of our listeners on Facebook who have sent in more. There are some just visually amazing, not to mention intellectually amazing, tattoos in here. One of the most, when it comes to text, looks like the Gutenberg Bible, is on the back of Carrie Harrison. He joins us right now from Woodstock, New York. Carrie Harrison, thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure, Tom. Hello, and hi, Justin. Hi, Eva.
This is some tattoo you've got, Carrie. I mean, it's basically from the top of your back to the bottom. It's two columns. Looks like something out of an old German Bible, but it's not. It's commentary, I guess, on Proust. Tell us about it.
Well, it comes from, I guess it's my favorite book or one of my favorite ones. I just had the idea of pledging myself to some text that I really loved and show how much I believe in it. This is by the philosopher Theodor Adorno. And I actually had occasion to strip off and demonstrate my loyalty to this philosopher at a graduate seminar at the School for Visual Arts, the right place to do that, I guess. So occasionally I get to show how much I care about Adorno. And this is from a sort of philosophical diary that he wrote around 1945, and it's called Minima Moralia. And it's little sections, reflections on all kinds of different things, and the opening reflection is on Marcel Proust and how difficult it is sometimes to be in the arts or in an academic life and maintain that you love it so much that you would almost pay to do it, and you won't be popular with your colleagues. That's what the text says. Beware of publicly loving your intellectual profession too much,
right,
in case you get people angry.
This is pretty esoteric, and there is a lot of it. I don't know what, 20, 30 lines, two columns, you know,
there's
dense, a lot
of
text.
Oh, man, it hurts so much.
What is the first reaction you get from people when they encounter, Carrie, your highly literary back?
They're kind of delighted. I'm actually asked quite frequently to strip to the waist at parties. The word has got around.
I bet you do.
And I mean, this could be useful. I guess I'm too old for it really to be a device to attract the ladies. But this could be one very good reason for having these tattoos.
You will make the party in about 5 seconds when that T-shirt comes off. You know, it's interesting. Your dad was Rex Harrison, the famous actor,
correct.
My Fair Lady, the Lily Palmer, the German actress. Your mom,
right.
Did they ever see this?
No, alas, they didn't. I don't know what they would have thought. Of course, as a good Jew, if I was a good Jew, I'm afraid I'm not a very
okay.
good one.
Okay.
But as a good Jew, I should not have a tattoo. You're supposed to give your body back to God in the form in which God gave it to you. And this was, of course, one of the reasons that the number tattoos in the camps were such an extra offense.
Kind of sacrilege.
Jews who were not supposed to be tattooed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what my mother would have thought, but it certainly, I feel very happy to have it. I forget it's there, because if you have a tattoo on your back, you don't see it unless you've got two mirrors. So if I go to the Y and somebody says,
yeah.
hey, what's that on your back? I think, oh my God, I've got some, is there a rash? Is there a spider? I forget it's there.
They must be fainting, and now you've got it, there's no going back. That is a whole lot of text. Do you ever have a regret, Gary?
No, I really don't.
Good thing.
Luckily, I did it late enough in life that I'm not going to fall out of love with the text that I chose. It would be really tough. I also have my wife's name on my shoulder blade, and when I had that inscribed, I said, what happens if my wife and I are no longer together? And the tattooist said, it's okay, come back, and I'll turn it into a cauliflower. So now, if you see anybody with a cauliflower on their body, that's probably me.
Cary Harrison with one tremendous literary tattoo up and down his back, Theodore Adorno commentary on Proust, no less. Cary, in Woodstock, New York, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Eva, Justin, it doesn't get much more texty than that, or does it? I mean, his back is covered in text.
I think that was probably the textiest.
Although we also
one
have
we
a full back piece of Kerouac, the last paragraph of On the Road, which I believe is up on the website right now.
Yes, it is. Oh, that's incredible. Complete with portrait of Kerouac kind of in the
mm-hmm.
midst of that.
At the typewriter.
And there he is talking about the roads of America and across Iowa and all the rest. And you've got some fragmented text. I forget who had that, but text kind of breaking up and cascading over the shoulder.
You're thinking of the William Gibson, I think.
Maybe so.
Yeah, the gentleman in England. He took a few paragraphs from William Gibson and...
This is Dan Slessor in Brighton, England, who took a couple pages from the book and sort of ripped them up so that no one entire sentence would be showing, but just words. And so it's when you see it's this kind of collage of a bunch of words together and you realize, oh, they are in English, they are saying something, but you can't quite read them. And he said he wanted to create the right blend of chaos and precision with that work.
We've got Caitlin Colford in New York with another little bit of Kerouac from Tristessa, the La Vida es Dolor. Life is pain. And then, of course, the great big one, this was Tess Adamski in Toronto. And it's Kerouac at his typewriter. Check it out at the website. It's unbelievable. And behind him, you know, so in America when the sun goes down and I sit on the old broken down river pier watching the long and right on to New Jersey and West Coast and Iowa and children crying. I mean, just it is a backful of Kerouac. Even Justin, stand by for a second. We've got people calling in, want to hear from them. Many have written in and sent their photographs. I've got a good bit of text sitting right next to me here in the studio in Boston. Teresa Michalowski is with me. She's got the Serenity Prayer in full on her lower leg and ankle and wrapped around her foot. Teresa, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Evan. Justin.
Hi, Teresa.
Teresa, remind us, for those who don't know it, what is tattooed? Give us the full text of what's on your foot.
It's the Serenity Prayer. It says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it's a prayer that I grew up by and I live by daily. So that's why I have it on me.
You kind of put me onto this whole thing. I was getting a haircut, looked down, saw your foot, and there was text just, you know, pouring out of the cuff of your blue jeans, and I thought, wow, that's something. That's something different. It's not small either. I mean, it's good, I don't know, 8 inches from top to bottom, something like that.
When people usually see it, when I'm wearing my skinny jeans, they just see the bottom of the text, and then I lift my pants up, and they can see the whole thing, and they're like, whoa.
How do people respond to it?
Some people like it. I mean, my father wasn't a fan of it, but he said if you're going to put anything on your body, that's something that he lives by, too.
Right.
So.
How old were you when you got it?
2 years ago, so I was 19.
19, and did he have anything to say about it, or you just went off and it was done? Or your parents are in on this or not?
No, I just went off and did it on my own, so.
I can't help wonder when I look at some of these things, I mean, is there a, did you just like this? Is there a trauma behind this? I mean, some of these look like people pushing back against some trauma in their lives.
I don't know. It's something that there's a lot of meaning behind it for me. Mm-hmm. So, and every day I...
It's there.
Yeah.
Does reaction to it depend on the age of who sees it? You know, old, middle, young, do they have different reactions?
Yes, definitely, yeah. A lot of younger people like it a lot, and the older people look at it a little funny, but because it's going to be on there for the rest of my life, so.
Do we have this on the website now? Can people see it there? Yes, it's at the website. You can see Teresa Michalowski's The Full Serenity Prayer right there on her leg, on her ankle, and it's there for life. Eva, what's your sense of why people do this? I mean, as you write, some are just... It's right in your title. Some are bookworms. Mm-hmm. They love words, but still there's something beyond the love of words clearly going on in a lot of these.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's everything from a whim to a declaration of love for a favorite author or text to, in many cases, a message that is either a hopeful or helpful reminder of, you know, to encourage someone to be strong or to remember they can survive and you know, this too shall pass kind of messages. And we have... one tattoo, James Claffey from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who has Beckett's fail better line, ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail better. And he says he got this tattoo after his first year of his second marriage and a particularly difficult Mardi Gras experience.
Oh my gosh.
There's some humor in this too, but also some, you know, reminders that you can, it'll be okay, you can keep going.
Yeah, here's I Feel Infinite on the back of somebody in Springfield, Missouri. From The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky. Mm-hmm. Here's, I don't know, they go on. Here's a huge excerpt from Dogfish by Mary Oliver on the back of Christiana Berger in Denver, Colorado. I live here, some kind of relaxed and beautiful thing kept flickering in the tide. The dogfish tore open the soft basins of water. I want to listen to the enormous waterfalls of the sun, a few people just trying one way or another to survive. And we're only halfway down her back at that point, and it goes on and on. Let's go to our listeners, Pendleton, South Carolina. Robin, you're on the air, Robin. What have you got?
Hi, I have a Virginia Woolf tattoo around my ankle.
What's it say?
It says, as a woman, my country is the whole world.
I love it. When did you do it and why?
I did it when I was 31. It was my first tattoo and still my only tattoo. I did it because... I have an English degree, and I'm a librarian, but
okay.
Virginia Woolf is one of my favorite writers, and it's an anti-xenophobia statement, but unfortunately, I didn't think it through. It's part of a longer quote, as a woman, my country, as a woman, I have no country, as a woman, I need no country, as a woman, my country is the whole world. Well, I just got the end of it, and... sometimes when I tell people, they just think it's actually a very xenophobic statement. So I'm thinking about going back and getting the other two lines added.
Tripling the scale of it. Oh, Robin, that's great. And what did your friends and family and, I don't know, colleagues think when you got it? Do they know?
They think it's great. One thing that I found really frustrating is that it's actually a quill, like, and it looks like it's writing the quote around my ankle in calligraphy.
Yes.
So it's very visually striking, but I find myself in airports and traveling and at conferences and being constantly asked, what does your tattoo say? And so I find myself, you know, having to relay the entire story, and I kind of wish I would have had it where it was more easy to read.
That's amazing. Maybe you should wear a name tag with the full text on it up higher. Robin, I so appreciate your call. You know, Eva, there's kind of one theme I found here was, people looking to tattoos sometimes for empowerment or affirmation. And I've got a Facebook comment here from Sarah. She says, I've always wanted, and maybe she will, Simone de Beauvoir's, one is not born but rather becomes a woman in French. Empowerment's a theme here, and not infrequently women's empowerment.
Yeah, I'd say we have a pretty fairly balanced number of women and men in the book. But although I wouldn't say there are more empowering, you know, tattoos on women than men here.
No, just one of many threads here.
Of many threads, yes. Also, a lot of librarians represented in the book. Yes. We have a couple alphabet tattoos, Dewey Decimal, a librarian skull over crossed books with the banner librarian under it.
Librarian power. I love it. Michael in Columbia, South Carolina. Michael, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What have you got?
I graduated seminary in 2001 and had tattooed on my back in Latin the phrase, "In everything may God be glorified," and "Omnibus glorificatur Deus."
Yes.
And then when I was commissioned as a Methodist minister, I had in Latin on my left shoulder a quotation of John Wesley's that says, "I'm a man of one book, homo unius libri." And then when I was ordained, I had on my right shoulder the ancient Latin phrase for a minister, which is servus servorum Dei, a servant of the servants of God.
So you're walking a kind of religious commitment. I want to ask you about that. Michael, I mean, the title of this book is The Word Made Flesh. Now, that, of course, is a very strong religious reference, but it's going to tattoos, not to any, you know, sort of Son of God idea. Does it bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. That's their word. I've got the word. I mean, you know, it's different interpretation of the same thing.
Michael, I'm so glad for your call. That's terrific. Thank you so much for calling in. And Brian, Duxbury, Massachusetts. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, I'm coming at this from the other side of being a children's book author illustrator who has a book jacket on somebody's arm. From elbow to shoulder.
Of your work, Brian?
About half a year ago, I got an email from a Ukrainian copywriter who said that she wanted to put the jacket of my book, Bats at the Library, on her shoulder. And I had to say yes, and it's a very, very strange experience to see your own work on somebody else's arm.
What do you make of that kind of commitment to what you've created?
Well, it's incredibly flattering. I mean, it's a relatively recent book, 2008.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say that having created the image myself, I would never put it on my own body. I can't imagine one of my own drawings I'd put on my body. So to have somebody else like it that much is really amazing.
You're in the pantheon of flesh now, Brian. Thanks for your call. Justin, Eva, what about it? Do you have any other experience of how authors respond to their works being tattooed, sometimes quite flamboyantly, across people's bodies?
Well, we have a few different experiences, actually. And when it is a situation where a living author's work is being tattooed on somebody else's body, I think each individual author responds to it in a very different way. Of course, Eva mentioned earlier, we have the Eric Carle tattoo. You know, he was very, very happy to draw on this woman's arm and kind of send her on her way, and he loved the idea. A sort of different perspective on it is the story of Brian Evanson and Robert Emig. Robert Emig is a literature student and a writer himself, I believe, and he got two lines of Brian Evanson's tattooed, one on each arm again, and the two lines are, "Truth cannot be imparted, truth must be inflicted." And these lines come from a novel that Brian Evanson wrote. And as it would happen, one year at the Associated Writing Programs conference, Robert Emig spotted Brian Evanson. He's, you know, Evanson's the author of a number of novels and story collections, a very good writer, and he is currently teaching the program at Brown. So, you know, he's around on the writing program scene. And the way that Evanson tells the story is Emig kind of walked right up to him and introduced himself and showed him the tattoos. And Evanson wrote a little kind of essay for us for this book, and it's in the book, where he talks about how just odd and disorienting this was. And it really threw him at first. He didn't know what to think. And then sort of over time came around. And I believe that him and Emig, and Robert Emig are still in touch. And,
yeah.
You know, but he needed time.
Once he realized Robert wasn't a stalker.
Right. And there will be.
He's pretty happy.
Right. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about literary tattoos, bodies adorned with Melville and Kafka, Pynchon, Plath, Kundera, Cervantes, and much, much more. The editors of the new book, The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide. Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor are with us from New York. Teresa Michalowski is with me in the studio. She's got quite the lovely tattoo. Reinhold Niebuhr's Serenity Prayer on her lower leg and foot. Beautiful script, halfway around and more. Teresa, Eva, Justin, we've got one more from the book right now. Joining us from Bloomington, Indiana, is Lee Bush. Hi, Lee. Are you there?
I'm here.
Tell us what you've got, madam.
Well, I actually have three literary tattoos, and all of them are in the book.
I'm looking at one right here. I had to look for a while to figure it out, but I think it's on your stomach. It's a circle of, is it Spanish or Latin? I'm just beginning to see. What have you got?
It is. It's in Spanish, and it's really small font. I actually had to bribe a lowly tattoo artist to do it in that small a font because they don't like to do that.
Who wrote it? What's it say?
It's written by Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, and in Spanish it says, Las ventajas en el entendimiento lo son en el ser, and roughly translated it says, the advantages of understanding are those of being. And it means
the advantages of understanding are those of being. That's out there. Give us a further translation. What's that mean to you?
Right. For me, it sort of means that in the pursuit of knowledge, our lives become richer and are literally more of a life. And I think that Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz is from Mexico in the 17th century, and she's sort of one of the first feminist scholars of the New Mexico area.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to punish herself for not learning something by cutting her hair off. She would give herself these things that she had to learn, and she ended up becoming a nun because they wouldn't let her go to university. She even asked her parents if she could dress up as a boy and attend university. So instead, she went into the nunnery, and she was a very widely respected, widely read nun of her day.
You've immortalized her now right on your tummy. You've got one on your forearm, I'm looking here, in the book, Lee, which I couldn't read, but it's in a kind of a Berber language, I guess, a Berber saying. What's it say?
Absolutely. That one says, actually, Tamazirt, which is the name of the language that it is written in. And that is from central Morocco, and it's the Berber language, and it is translated as the language of the free people. And that's the name of the Amazigh people, is the free people. And I spent a bunch of time in Morocco when I was traveling around the world after college, sort of trying to figure out my life. And a friend of mine and I ended up hitchhiking to this village in central Morocco. And we just sort of stranded ourselves there for a couple weeks. And we had such a good time. We felt so free, I guess, at the time.
You brought it home on your arm. That's
yep.
Kind of old school. I mean, that's the way these first came. What, sailors and whatnot, very often, a century and more back, bringing them back home. And then you've got one from Edgar Allan Poe on your forearm as well?
Yeah. I've got one other one. And it says, Imp of the Perverse. Also written freehand by a tattoo artist. And I thought that was a perfect balance to my freedom tattoo because I do have this imp, which is that little demon that tells you to do exactly the wrong thing in any given situation. And I think mine is overactive, which is probably why I have all these tattoos.
And interestingly, in this one, we may see a little evidence of that. You tell us, but there are clearly scars underneath. This is the inside of what looks like maybe your left forearm, and we can see the scars that you, and you say in the book here, that you had cut yourself. You were a cutter earlier in life. Is that related to you, I don't know, getting these tattoos, Lee?
Yeah, definitely is. I felt a little bit, I guess I was a typical angsty teenager, but took it to the extreme by cutting my arms a lot in high school and even on into college. And finally, actually, when I sort of swore off it for good, I decided to get my tattoo Imp of the Perverse just to remind myself that my imp is always there and I'm always going to have to reckon with it.
So there's three in total. What do they do for you? Do they bolster you? Do they communicate who you are to the rest of the world? What's that? What, Lee?
Yeah, definitely. They're a sign that, for me, actually sort of a statement that I want to keep being creative, and that creative expression is the way that I like to interact with this world, and that I think that that's an important way that people have sometimes missed out on life. And right now I work with food, so I think of creative expression through food as a way that people stop and pay attention to each other and interact with each other a little bit more. And tattoos are a really great way to get people to interact with you, even if you're missing out or forgetting to relate with the rest of the world. And people will just come up to you because you have a tattoo and ask you about it. And whether or not you're ready to talk to them, there you are. You're interacting with another human being.
And if it's literary, you're off in maybe some deep water real quick. Lee Bush in Bloomington, Indiana, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Eva, Justin, I'm looking at one here on page 126. This one caught my attention. It's a big, looks like red-tailed hawk on the inside of an upper arm. And there's a story behind it. Tell us about that one, Eva, if you would.
This comes from a friend of ours, who's also a bookseller in Brooklyn, New York, Adam Wilson, who is a fan of Bolaño and got the hawk from... What is it? Godzilla in Mexico, tattooed on the inside of his arm.
And people may not know that this is Roberto Bolaño. It's a poem, Godzilla in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
And the line, he got this in the original Spanish, but it translates as, "We are human beings, my son, almost birds."
He says he's got the bird here as well because he was sitting looking out a window in New York and saw a red-tailed hawk swoop down, catch a rat, eat it. Everybody was watching, and boom, it's on his arm. This one caught my attention because it turns out I know Adam Wilson. I've known him since he was a boyo, and it's a lot of fun to see that there. That's incredible. Teresa,
I was wondering if you knew him through his father. His father's the novelist Jonathan Wilson.
Yes, literature runs in the family, and now right on the skin.
Yeah,
that's great, terrific guy, terrific family. Teresa, what are you thinking as you look at these? Are you thinking maybe time to get more, or
or
not?
Are,
or the opposite?
They are addicting. I'm not too much of a reader myself, but there's a few things that definitely have a lot, that give me like a lot of meaning and a lot of thoughts in my life. So,
absolutely. And people clearly who are readers are really, really into what they've read here, as you are with yours. Eva?
Part of our intentions for this book were to A, encourage people to get more tattoos, and B, to encourage people to read more. And I think, in flipping through this book, you'll see a favorite writer of yours, be like, oh, I love James Joyce, great. And then you see something else you haven't heard of, and you're like, wow, this must be pretty good if someone got it tattooed on themselves. Maybe I'll check it out.
I'm all for the reading more. The more tattoos, I'm still of mixed minds about. I don't know, but I got to tell you, these days in this country, maybe in many others as well, there's so many around that they do add another layer to life. I mean, people are communicating as they just walk by you, and suddenly it's popping a lot of things into 3D, or at least 2D, on these arms and necks and backs and ankles.
Oh, absolutely. And communicating with strangers, kind of broadcasting this material in a very public way, but also, communicating with individuals, one-on-one. I think that sharing a tattoo experience is a way that people bond with each other sometimes. And we have several pieces, contributions in the book that are, that are from pairs of people. You mentioned the Joyce earlier. Natalie Lye Allen and Leslie Yalen got the last line of Joyce's Ulysses, which is itself a very popular tattoo choice. Yes, I said yes, I will, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
From the end of
yes,
Molly
yes,
Bloom's.
Yeah, yeah.
So they split the line in half, and they each got it. And Natalie has... yes, I said on an ankle, and then Leslie has the other half. Yes, I will. Yes, on her shoulder. And then if you look elsewhere in the book, you can see Matthew Rohrer and Rebecca Wolf, two very wonderful poets and two longtime editors of the literary journal Fence. They have matching alphabets on their ankles. Rebecca has an all capital alphabet going around her ankle, and Matthew has an all lowercase alphabet going around his.
And on. I mean, you've got a fully illustrated kind of Infinite Jest from David Foster Wallace. Here's John Singleton in L.A. Mm-hmm. with the opening lines of Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Right down the arm. Aaron in Storrs, Connecticut. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. What do you know, Aaron?
On my left shoulder blade, I have a tattoo that says, "Two arrows, you burn me." And it's by the Greek poet Sappho.
What does it mean to you, Aaron?
Well, as you probably know, Eros is the Greek god of love, but also sexual desire. And I first read this particular fragment from Sappho when I was in high school. And typically you're going through a lot of emotions as a teenager, so it really resonated with me. And I figured, hey, this is something that I wouldn't mind having on my body for the rest of my life.
Was it for a particular person? And what if later on there's another person?
Yeah, I mean, when I read it, I felt that applied to the person that I had feelings for at the time. But now I can also apply that not only to my current boyfriend, but to everyone in general as a form of universal love, I guess.
And it's right out there. Aaron has two arrows. You burn me from Sappho. Aaron, thanks for calling. Let's get another. Brookline, Massachusetts. Bud, you're on the air.
How are you, Tom?
Is this Bud Collins, tennis commentator extraordinaire?
I hope so.
Hi, Bud. Thanks for calling. What have you seen out there in the tattoo front?
Well, I tell you, there's a Serbian tennis player, Janko Tipsarevic, who's one of the best 50 players in the world, and on his left arm, he's right-handed, and on his left arm is a quote from Dostoevsky, "Beauty will save the world." It's from The Idiot, and so, of course, this was a curiosity when this guy first came to attention, and he's helped Serbia get to the Davis Cup final this year, and
yeah.
He's a very sensitive guy.
Beauty will save the world from Dostoevsky. I mean, that's a beautiful thought, and we hope it's true. But let me ask you, I mean, you think about all things. We've got other people, you know, writing and saying, oh, this is the end of civilization, this tattoo mayhem. What do you say to that, Bud?
Well, as long as you stick with Dostoevsky, I didn't tell him that he could use one of my columns on his back, but I will the next time I see him.
Bud Collins, thank you very much for sharing that.
Nice to talk to you, Tom.
You too, Bud. Beauty will save the world. And one from Atlanta, Georgia. Cheryl, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
We're well. What have you got, Cheryl?
I have a tattoo of Black Sun, which is inspired by Harry Crosby, who was a writer born in Boston who went to Paris during the big expatriate movement during the Lost Generation.
Okay.
And he actually created the Black Sun Press, which published first editions of Joyce, Hemingway, Heirs of Pound, basically gave a lot of our prominent 20th century writers the first chance to be published, an extremely beautiful edition. So I literally have a Black Sun on my back, and then underneath that I have a line in kanji from a poet I admire very much named Sakurai Atsushi, who's a Japanese poet, and the kanji translates to Kuretatayo, which means mad sun, or the sun which went mad. So it kind of ties together two almost disparate literary cultures that have inspired me throughout my life and which I collect, and so it's there.
Wow, kanji, sort of the Japanese version of Chinese characters there, and Black Sun, a high literary reference. What does that mean, Cheryl? Are you a writer, a publisher, a librarian, just a... literary maniac.
And I write. I have several personal writings that I do, but I've always collected Black Sun Press editions because they're so beautiful. And I first got my start, say, professionally in the literary world, selling rare books, and those books are just so exquisitely modern, yet just everything was hand typeset. And so for me, it's just an attention to beauty, but also Harry Crosby's life is extremely inspiring to me. He lived a rather chaotic, decadent lifestyle, but at the same time, he had an unwavering focus on the things that he believed in. So, I think his chaotic element is suitable for this time period that I'm living in.
Maybe you and us all. I can't help wondering if that's not part of this. I mean, we are in fairly chaotic times, and people looking to put something bolstering, something that will last right on their bodies. You've got in here, Eva and Cheryl. Thanks. Even Justin, you've got lines from Dante's Inferno, and we emerge mm-hmm. to see the stars. You've got Martin Amis on somebody's forearm here. I want to shiver and sob. I look up. Something's coming. And you've got a whole book that's being written on different bodies. Tell us about that.
That's the Shelley Jackson Skin Project. This is something Shelley is a writer and an artist, and she started this project a number of years ago. Shelley wrote a short story. It's called Skin. And it's 3,000 or 4,000 words long. The exact number's in here somewhere. But Shelley decided that she would publish this story in an unusual format. She would publish the story one word at a time in tattoos on the bodies of participants. Wow. And so for a number of years now, she's been inviting people to apply to get a tattoo, and you have to send her a letter and do this whole thing. And if she accepts you, she sends you a word, which you then have to get tattooed in a legible font somewhere on your on your body, and then you send her a picture of it. And then at that point, she sends you the full text of the story, which you can read. And the idea is that nobody other than the people who have participated in the project will ever get to read the story. And then as the years go on, you know, the story will very slowly kind of come into being, and then over the years and decades, very slowly slide out of being once again. And she's gotten, she tells me, many more applications than she has words in the story. And I think even more...
Everyone wants to read it.
Yeah.
And you've got one on your body, Eva? Melville something?
No, actually, I don't have a Melville tattoo. I have a tattoo of two rectangles that come from a poem by the Russian avant-garde writer Daniel Karms.
Wow.
I have a window and a doorway.
This is very esoteric.
I wanted to get something that no one else had, and after having seen 200 or 300 submissions for this book and seen all the different writers that were popular, and I wanted to get, you know, my own thing.
Well, check out what's going on at our Facebook page right now. More coming in there. Teresa, it's so good of you to be here. Do you think you're going to have this for life? Are you committed? The Serenity Prayer?
Yes,
it's
definitely.
There in full in beautiful script right on your ankle?
It's
lifetime?
Not going anywhere yet.
Not going anywhere?
No. Nope.
You're not going to do an Angelina Jolie and cover it over with some other more popular thing later?
I doubt it.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have your tattoo right here in the studio with us today. Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor, this is some kind of presentation, a world I have to admit I didn't really know. But thank you very much for putting it together. It's really something. Thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you. This was really a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Eva Talmadge and Justin Taylor, they are editors of The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide. You can see a gallery of images of tattoos from the book at our website. Check out more from our listeners at Facebook. Add your own. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.